Ramble.
To be completely transparent with you, I am still at that stage in my life where if you tell me, hey, something's gonna make you feel better or something's gonna make your skin clear, I'll probably be like, give me the clear skin. But growing up is realizing that you can have both. And I have made it a habit to implement things in my life that let me have both. Did you know that your gut health really impacts your skin health? And not just skin, apparently your gut health can impact your immune system, your energy levels, even your mental health. That is why I've now added my favorite probiotic from Symbiotica to my morning routine. It sounds weird to say, but Symbiotica's health supplements are now part of my skincare routine almost. If you guys don't know, Symbiotica is a supplement company that only uses clean premium ingredients in its formulas. No seed oils, no fillers, no additives, no natural flavors, and no artificial ingredients. Symbiotica also formulates all of their supplements for optimal absorption. For example, I love their vitamin C so much, which is also really good for your skin if you didn't know. Everybody loves it. I mean, it's probably the most popular vitamin C amongst all of my friends and family. We love Symbiotica. Their vitamin C is formulated with liposomal technology, which basically means the vitamin C is delivered to the part of your digestive tract where it can be optimally absorbed. And I just love throwing one in my bag on the go, especially when I'm traveling. Symbiotica makes it so easy to stick to a routine, not just because of their supplements being great and tasting great and making me feel great, but also because they get delivered monthly. That means I never have to worry about refilling my supplements or running out, and it's just so easy to pause a delivery or add a new supplement to my delivery. With Symbiotica, I've really noticed an improvement in my skin health, but also I feel like I have more energy and mental clarity. Symbiotica has countless high-quality supplements that you can choose from. Sleep supplements, cognitive supplements, anti-aging supplements. If you're not sure which supplements would be best for your specific needs, you can do a short quiz on Symbiotica's website, and they'll recommend what you could benefit from. This year is your year. Are you ready to feel the results? Head over to symbiotica.com and use code Rotten for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. That's symbiotica.com and use code Rotten.
I think you're a serial killer. I think that I am dating a full-fledged serial killer. Here's the thing. When I was younger, I was so freaking excited to be on my own, to move out of my parents' house, to get away from my mom. Okay, that sounds personal. No. I was so excited to be an adult so that what? I could eat whatever I wanted. I could browse the sections of the grocery store and just grab and go. Well, obviously I'd pay for it. That sounds like I was stealing lots of hot Cheetos. No, I would pay for it, right? But my fiance is willingly, consensually, and actually choosing to sit in front of me right now and eat a trail mix without even chocolate. There's no chocolate involved. There's no chocolate covered almonds. There's no chocolate chips. There's nothing. It's literally just almonds, not even the salted ones, like the raw almonds. You've got some fucking cashews, non-salted. I mean, just eating like that. Who are you? Oh, that was good, though. I think that you're a serial killer. Okay. What?
What's this?
An almond. Do you not know how to say almond?
And what is...
Oh, welcome to our riveting podcast where we talk about nuts.
What's this?
That's a cashew.
This is not a cashew.
It's a cashew. It's a pistachio.
I think it's a garbanzo bean.
All right. Put your garbanzos away because today we've got a very riveting topic. I mean, this is a crime that it took me days to study this one because I just did not understand how a strip club that really profits off of just selling patrons this motorized dildo. I'm not kidding. I mean, you're going to hear that a lot in today's story is me saying, I can't make this shit up. This is not a lie. I'm not making this up because of how just far-fetched this true crime is, and I can't believe more people aren't talking about it. This is a crime about how the Russian mafia goes to bed with the Colombian cartels. Yeah, there's dildos involved, there's submarines involved, Russian Soviet submarines to the tune of $35 million involved. It's freaking ridiculous. There's strippers involved, there's just so many weird stories. I don't know where to start, so I'm just going to start with what the actual crime is. Did people die, you know, etc., etc.? And I'm sure there's lots of people that ended up dying, and I'm sure there's lots of people that end up dying because of the business that these people are in, but we're going to be focusing mainly on about like a handful of people that were just so They were just mastermind criminals. I don't even know how to say it nicely. So in 1997, the FBI uncovered, they unveiled a plot of a strip club owner trying to sell a Soviet military submarine to the Colombian drug cartel, the Cali cartel, for $35 million.
Where were they?
They were in Miami. The strip club was in Miami. You're like, yeah, of course, makes sense. No, I'm surprised that that doesn't happen more often in Miami. And the Cali cartel, if you guys don't know, is a cartel that runs primarily out of Cali, Colombia. And that's the city called Cali. And the most notable leader of the Cali cartel was Pablo Escobar. So it's an intense ass cartel. I mean, they, at one point in their height, they were bringing in around, I think, $9 billion annually just from the United States, and that was all cash, no taxes. Who's the IRS? They don't fucking know. That's not funny, sorry.
Damn.
I don't want to get into deep of the drug aspect, because I feel like a lot of this is going to come off as almost comical, almost so what the fuck that it doesn't make any sense, that it's so funny. But I also know that drugs wreak havoc on people's lives. So this is not me saying like, whatever, drugs are fine. Like, yes, drugs everywhere. Let's just move the drugs all across the world so that everyone can have drugs. That's not it. But I will say it's kind of a comical story. I just don't want to make it seem like I'm like not putting any attention towards how drugs can kill people, ruin lives. You get it.
But you're saying like they're doing way more than just drugs.
Oh yeah, they're doing way more than drugs. They're weird. And it all starts with a Ukrainian gangster by the name of Tarzan. That was his nickname. His real name is Ludwig Feinberg, but I feel like that doesn't have enough street credit, you know what I mean? And so his nickname was Tarzan, and he immigrated from Ukraine to New York. He went to Brooklyn first, and he felt like the American dream was just the best shit ever. And I'm going to take his own quotes from this. He said that the U.S. is a country of opportunities. You wake up in the morning, you want to be a movie star? I was going to say booby star. A booby star? You could do it. You want to be a movie star? You could do it. And he says, you want to wake up and become a gangster, a drug lord? That's also possible. That is literally his quote. He said that is very possible. And he says that he loves America. Now, he gets his job in Brooklyn with the Gambino crime family. So we're talking about just these most notorious gangsters. Like, you think of any mob boss movie, like the Gambinos are involved. They were a massive, massive crime family in New York. And he joins, and he was given a very low level rank job. He was not, you know, whispering into the main Gambino's ears, talking about all of his, ooh, we should do this, we should try this. No, he was what's called an enforcer, which means they just go and they enforce the laws of the Gambino crime family. And if you were to ask for his job description, he said shit like, okay, so this is what we would do. We would go into these houses, we would go into these stores, we would go all across Brooklyn, and we would just light shit on fire. We would light stores on fire, we would light houses on fire, you know, we did all of that. And he said it's so easy to have arson jobs done in the U.S. because the firemen do the rest. I don't know how firemen are in Ukraine, but he says it's almost comical, because in the U.S. you start a tiny little fire, and then the firemen come in, they smash your windows open, they hose your entire, they soak your entire store and your house down with water and like fire resistant foams, like fire extinguishers. And so you just started a small fire, but the firemen will actually ruin the rest of your house, is how he put it.
That is so weird.
Yeah. So the way that he thinks is so very interesting. And he said, you know, I was a little bit rough, but it was mainly for people who didn't pay. So people who would owe the Gambino crime family money. And if people asked him what his job description was or what his job was, he would say that he was just a collection agent. And he was just super illegal, like the violent illegal kind. And he would beat people up. He broke into houses. He tried to steal money from them when they needed it. And he was making a shit ton of money by doing this. I mean, him and his partner, they were going around just setting little fires all over Brooklyn, and they were killing it. They were making so much money.
How did they make money?
The Gambino crime family would pay them. Yeah, it's like a in-house security guards, collection agents. And his partner ends up one day. Okay, so Tarzan wakes up one day, Brooklyn, amazing morning, ready to go set some more houses on fire. He's ready for this job. He's born to do this. And then he goes to knock on his partner's door, and his partner has been killed, shot, murdered And this was very serious. I mean, this was not a random crime. This was not, you know, a serial killer on the loose in Brooklyn. This was sending a message to the Gambino crime family. When you're dealing with people like this, every murder, none of it is a coincidence. You can never really look at it and be like, what a coinkydink that they just happened to have all of their hands stuffed into the Gambino crime family. But maybe it was an accident. Maybe it was just a random hit. And so he said he freaking heard the message. He was like, listen, I'm not going to wait around so that they can kill the other half of this team. I mean, it's a two-person team that we were running. So no, thank you. So he asks all of his Italian crime mobsters that he's like, you know, where should I go next? I'm scared of Brooklyn. I don't want to be here. I want to go somewhere nice. And they said, you know, I heard Miami's nice. I heard Miami's really nice and you could find a lot of work in Miami. And so he packs his bags and he fucking moves to Miami. Now, Miami at the time that he moves was, I mean, I don't know how it is right now. I know right now they're getting made fun of because of coronavirus, but I don't know how it is in terms of like all of these other things, in terms of organized crime. But they said that the cocaine wars were raging in Miami. So you've got gang wars going on in Miami at the time that he moves. And he's like, this is the best place. I've never wanted to be anywhere else. And so you've got half of Miami fighting the other half of Miami. And then you've got, because of the closeness of Miami to South America, you've got so much drug movement coming in and out of the port of Miami. I mean, they share the same waters. So a lot of the drugs were being transported via boat into Miami, and then it'd be spread across the United States. I mean, there was just so much drug stuff going on. And then this is the words of a DEA agent. This is not my words, okay? A DEA agent said, you know, and then it all got really bad because the Russians started coming to town. And we have a Russian friend, and you know, ironically, she did live in Miami. She still has a house in Miami and she loves Miami. Yeah. So they were like, okay, the Russians are coming to town. And the Russians mainly migrated to Miami because they loved the sun. They loved the ocean. But there was also, again, that access to South America that the Russians seemed to be very, very interested in. I don't know if this is true, or I feel like it's probably one of those things where originally people will move with intention. And then just because now there's a higher Russian population, if you're immigrating from Russia, you're like, let's go there because there's a lot of Russians there instead of the middle of the Midwest where there's no Russians and I can't get Russian food. You get it. And so he moves and he has all of this money that he made from burning people down and burning houses down in Brooklyn. And Tarzan's like, I'm going to open up a strip club. I'm going to take that money and open up the most banging club in Miami. And he gets a manager and he sees this guy who's a Russian dude and his name's Fat Tony. Yeah, that is not my description.
Isn't that a restaurant?
Fat Tony.
Oh, no, Fat Sauce.
That's Fat Sauce, Sauce. Yeah. Oh, Fat Sauce. Yeah, his name is Fat Tony. And so he starts managing the strip club, and it's called Porky's. Porky's. Yeah, like pork, Porky's. Yeah, it's all so strange. And so in the beginning, it wasn't doing that well because why would anyone want to go to a strip club called Porky's? I mean, it has some weird connotations towards it. I mean, I think there was a movie called Porky's. Maybe that's why they named it after it. But it was just all so strange. And then the manager, Fat Tony, was like, you know what? I need to class this place up. This place is not liked by all the high-end people. It's not liked by all the big balashak kalas coming in here with stacks and racks of cash. Me trying so hard to act like I know strip club language. And he's like, I'm gonna class this place up. So how do we think that Fat Tony did this? Did he, you know, put on a burlesque show? Did he, you know, try to serve good food? Did he up the quality of the liquor? No. He said, here's what we're gonna do. You know those toy cars? You know the ones that you can get at the dollar store, Target, Walmart, wherever the fuck you go? Well, what we're gonna do is we're gonna get those remote controlled toy cars. We're gonna strap on some dildos on top of them. And then the girls are gonna lay out on stage butt naked. And then the patrons, you will have all these clients pay to get 5 minutes to control the remote control car to see if they can insert the dildo.
What?
Yeah. So that, I mean, he just felt like he really classed the place up with that idea.
How does that make sense?
Yeah, so we'd imagine toy cars, you know, in the kids section, but then like you strap a dildo on top of it, and then let's say, you know, John Doe over here wants to get a ride with the with the car. You give him the remote, he pays the stripper money, and he starts, you know, she's laying down on the ground, and he's trying to skirt, you know, U-turn, fucking Daytona race.
So they turn into like an arcade.
Yeah, like a adult Formula One you know, Tokyo Drift could never, Fast and the Furious could never.
And that was a hit.
Oh, it was a freaking hit. Literally, but everyone started coming. Oh, wait. Okay, no, yeah.
But there's nothing so proprietary about that. Anybody could copy it.
Yeah, but, you know, Porky's at that point, they were just getting that name. Like, it just, they wanted to go to Porky's. They didn't want to go to any other place that was copying it. And Tarzan was, he was a good marketer at one point. So it becomes a very popular destination. Now, is it a very safe destination? Absolutely not. So they had a saying back in the day that if you go to any other strip club in Miami, you would be lucky to leave with your wallet. Okay, that it doesn't get stolen, because during this time, Miami was not a great stage and these strip clubs were doing some dirty shit back in the day. And then now Porky's, they say, well, you'd be lucky to leave with both of your kidneys. Like, it was a very dangerous area. Shootings were very common. Tarzan himself always had two guns on his body. He had one strapped to his belt and then he had another one on his ankle. I mean, I don't know what that one is.
On the ankle?
Mm-hmm.
That's like a backup gun.
Yeah, so he liked to sit. You know how you can sit with your legs crossed, but you can also place your ankle on your knee?
Yeah.
Yeah, he liked to sit like that so that it'd be easy access. Bat, bat, bits, and I'll do it again. Yeah, no, exactly. And so it's a very dangerous area, and it became a massive Russian gangster hangout to the point where even all of the local police knew about it. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a Russian that lives in Moscow or if you're a Russian that lives in New York or Los Angeles. If you go to Miami and you've got any questions about how to do anything illegal, you go to Porky's and you look for Tarzan. It was like a thing. He was like in the Yellow Pages. Like, this is like, he was on Yelp for Russians. Essentially, like, this is the dude that you go to. You want to move some drugs, you want to hire a hitman, you want 23 prostitutes that are all 23 years old, you go to Tarzan. I mean, yeah, he was really making a name for himself.
Okay.
And so the task, there becomes massive, just massive police freakouts. I mean, they were freaking out because you're already talking about so many drug gangs. You're talking about all of the what they call the cartels coming in. You know, a lot of them were from Venezuela and Colombia, I believe, right? And then you've got the Russians coming in. And there, I saw all these news networks from back in the day in the 90s that were talking about the Russians. And they were like, the Red Scare, the Russians. And they were like threatening to bring the Red Scare to the United States via Miami. Bloodshed everywhere. You know, all of that stuff. I mean, there was a lot of fear in the people of Miami and with the U.S. And so they put together this task force. And this task force was called Operation Odessa. And I feel like that is definitely a Russian name. Don't know the heritage behind that name, but it sounds Russian. And it was a mixture of FBI agents, DEA agents, the Coast Guard, Customs, Immigration, and local police officers. So you're talking about a massive, massive task force. And they were just trying to get to the bottom of cracking down on all of this crazy cartel crime and all of these Russian mobsters in Miami. And what they discovered was that it was going to get a lot worse. So initially they thought, okay, we got some gangs in Miami. We got the cartel that keeps coming to Miami and doing business in Miami. But then we also got the Russians in here and they're all killing each other and killing everyone and just the Russians are doing their own thing, right? But once they set up this task force called Operation Odessa, they discovered that the Colombian cartel was actually teaming up with the Russian mobs. That is going to get so crazy. So the cartels, they've got drug money. I mean, they've got money on money on money. And this drug money, it is not even, I don't even think Apple or Google could even understand the concept of this money. Like, they are billions of dollars just in cash.
$1 trillion. Oh. Apple.
Okay, so the cartel, like, wasn't that cool. I mean, I guess I could fight them myself. I'm just kidding. And so they just had crazy, crazy money. Now, the Russian mafia and the mobs, they have money, but they don't have cartel money. But they do have something else. They're known to be incredibly crafty. They're really smart. They like to twist their minds. They're kind of like the brains of these operations. They know how to evade the law really well. They have access to military devices, because back in the day, in the 90s, it was the Soviet Union, and they didn't really keep inventory of military devices, and there was so much corruption. So you could literally go to Russia and buy a military grade helicopter and bring it back into the US.
A chopper.
A chopper. Yeah. Oh, there's so many choppers in this story. There's so many choppers, so many motorcycles, and then there's just submarines on submarines. It's crazy. Yeah.
What are they doing?
They're trying to move drugs with them.
A chopper?
Yeah, because I was thinking too, why do these drug cartels need so many choppers? Are they going on so many helicopter city view rides for Instagram pics? Like, what is Pablo doing? No, it's to move drugs. Yeah.
There's no regulation.
I mean, there is, but I feel like it's easier to get away with a chopper. Like, imagine boarding a Delta flight. Like, I'm sure it's so much harder.
Facts.
I actually don't know how people move drugs, so so they're like, oh shit's about to go down. Now the two people that they discovered were kind of like the conduits between the Colombian cartel and the Russian mob was Tarzan. He has all of these Russian connections, he knows all of these Russian mobsters. And then Juan, he's been like a Miami resident for so long, and he also is very, very wealthy, and he has connections to lots of cartels, not particularly the Cali cartel, but lots of other smaller cartels in South America. And so he just was very, very smart. So Juan was kind of the opposite of Tarzan. Tarzan is like this big Ukrainian dude who's just like, yeah, fuck it, whatever, let's just do it, right? And then Juan, he was kind of sleazy. He was super, super sleazy. He sold cars, he sold boats, helicopters, and then finally he tries to sell submarines to these cartels. I mean, he's so intellectual. He is shrewd. He's super connected. He knows exactly how to hide assets for gangsters.
So he's just like a broker, a businessman.
Yeah, a businessman. And so it all started with luxury vehicles. So he would sell these Ferraris to these, you know, cartel members. And of course, they come in with just like bags of cash. And he knows exactly what they do for business. But he's like, don't fucking tell me. I don't need to know shit. I'm not a cop. And he would sell them Ferraris. He would sell them illegal street cars, because there's a lot of illegal cars that get imported from Europe that are either faster or for whatever reason, they're just not street legal in the US, or not even just legal in the US, right? And he would import those and he would sell them to these cartel members, and he was making a name for himself. Like, if you were part of the cartel, or if you just had tons of cash and you didn't want like a Ferrari salesman to be like, why do you have so much cash, like fill out this form please, you know, then you would go to Juan. And it was so crazy because the Mercedes SL500, the first one ever made, was released in the 90s, and a lot of people were trying to get their hands on it. I mean, you're talking billionaires, you're talking about CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. You're talking about like the Kardashians of whoever was the Kardashians in the 90s. I don't freaking know who was the Kardashian. Like, who would compare? I don't know. And so all these people are trying to get their hands on one. But little did everyone know that the first fleet of them actually went to the cartel. I don't even think Mercedes, well, I feel like Mercedes probably knew. So what happened was Juan was actually commissioned by the cartels, and they said, listen, we want the SL500s. Like, we freaking love these cars. We want like a dozen of them, maybe two dozen. And they were all starting at around $100,000, right? And so they're like, we want two dozen. And he's like, I know you guys have the money, but you know how difficult it is to get this car that everybody wants all of a sudden? And they were like, well, make it happen. We're going to pay you to make it happen. So he ends up flying to Switzerland. I don't know why Switzerland, okay? Juan goes to Switzerland and he rents a cargo aircraft, loads that shit up with a fleet of SL500s, and flies that to Colombia and delivers the first fleet of SL500 Mercedes to the cartels before anybody else had them.
He's a hustler.
He's a freaking hustler. Damn. I mean, he is crazy. And the fact that I had no idea, like, I always assumed, I don't know, that it would be like famous people or like super rich people who would get the first of the car. But no, it was like the cartel. I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm just laughing because I had no idea. And then so in 1991, the Soviet Union collapses. Now, this sounds like such a long time ago, but it really wasn't, right? So the Soviet Union collapses. Now, this is an amazing time for people to go in and try to make money, or at least that's what Juan and Tarzan thought. You know, Tarzan, he's Ukrainian, so he kind of understands how Moscow works a little bit. He's intrigued. Juan's intrigued. And so they said, let's just do it. Let's let's just fucking fly to Moscow and see what we can buy. I mean, I'm sure there's no leadership. They said even in the United States, all of the news was just saying like, who's going to be the next ruler of Russia? Like, we don't even know. Like, what's going on in Russia? We don't fucking know. Like, nobody knew what was going on in Russia. Russia didn't even know what was going on in Russia. And so they fly to Moscow and it just was complete chaos over there. Like, you had riots, protesters, but then you also didn't have any government lead. People were just trying to do what they could and try to make ends meet. So everything was for sale. That's what that meant. That did not mean anything political to Tarzan or to Juan. It just meant everything's for sale. When everything goes to shit, the only thing you get out of it are lots of sales. Everything's for sale. Military stuff are for sale. Weapons are for sale. Drugs are for sale. Everything's for sale. And so they go to Moscow and they had heard about this motorcycle factory, and these motorcycles, they were really expensive in the US. I think they were like tens of thousands of dollars in the US to get this motorcycle. It was a nice brand and they were well made. They were super fast. And they're like, we want to go buy these fucking motorcycles. They have no idea. They've never been to Russia before. They're like, it's in this city somewhere. We got to leave Moscow. We got to go to this city. How do we get to this city? And so they're like sitting there like, is there a plane that goes there? But then even if we got a plane, I mean, how does this freaking work? And so they're like, oh, here's what we're going to do. Let's rent some choppers. Let's rent some helicopters. And so they call a little aircraft area, right? They're an airport. And they say, hey, do you guys have any pilots with helicopters that we can rent? So we'll pay. And it's like one of those like city views that you do for Instagram. But it's like, no, we're doing it for a point A to point B destination type of trip, right? And so the person's like, you want to rent a helicopter? I mean, like at this time, nobody had money, right? Like nobody was rolling in it. And especially with this political atmosphere, nobody's like, hey, I just want to take a scenic ride on a helicopter right now. Like that's just not the time, dude. Read the room. And so she's like, okay. And so she calls back and she's like, sir, we do have a lot of helicopters and we do have a lot of pilots, but I highly doubt that you would want to do it. I know it's so expensive. Right now, we're currently charging $500 a helicopter for you to ride all day in it with a pilot.
What is that? That's a very
that's
little.
That's so little. Mm. And Tarzan and Juan were used to paying so much money. And Tarzan, being the hustler that he is, he goes, oh man, that is really expensive. But I'm going to pay it. And so for these two people, it was just the two of them, they rented 10 helicopters. Not because they needed 10. They just wanted to invade a city, like the feeling of invading a city, just taking over a city, Hannah Montana, that shit. Just they wanted to fly in with a fleet of choppers just to impress people that they didn't even know anyone that lived in that city. They didn't even know what was going on in that city. Just for the shits of it, because it was only $500 a chopper. So they're like, we're millionaires. Let's fucking do it. Whatever, Russia, woo. So they get 10 choppers. They're in separate choppers. There's just 8 pilots that are flying empty choppers behind them.
I thought they were trying to pick up some motorcycle,
but they're not gonna bring it in the choppers. And so they rent these helicopters, and then they're telling the pilot, hey, so this factory in this city, that's our destination, right? And the pilots are like, oh yeah, we know that city, but we don't know where that factory is. Like, that's a random factory. Like, how the hell are we supposed to know that factory? It's not even a famous factory. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, well, then what do we do? Like, we're already in the air. I just told you our destination. We're headed towards the city. How do you not know where the factory is? And so the pilot was like, oh, no big deal. I'll take care of it. And so they decide to land in the middle of a city, in the middle of that city, in the middle of an intersection, with all 10 of their choppers. And they stopped the choppers. They got out and they asked the old woman that they could find nearby, hey, where's that motorcycle factory? And she said, you have to fly that way. That way, fly that way. And so finally they flew around and around and around until they could find the motorcycle factory. It sounds so funny, but I think that just goes to show there definitely was no law and order in Russia at the time. Like, they landed in the middle of a city. Like, how does that happen? There's no air traffic control police. There's no air police. There's no helicopter sent by that city to be like, the fuck are y'all doing right now? Like, this is illegal. There just was none of that. So they landed in the middle of the city. They get to the motorcycle factory. They land in front of it. And a police guy approaches them with a stick, a baton. Ooh, a baton. And so he's like, what are you guys doing here? And they go, we're from Moscow. And he goes, oh, okay, what should I do now? Like, the police asked them what he should do now because he has no idea. Like, there's no law and order. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't have a boss. What if these people are powerful people? He doesn't even fucking know. I mean, they just came down with choppers. Like, this police dude has never seen a chopper in his life. Like, he's just so freaking confused. And they say, here's what you're going to do. You're going to watch these helicopters while we go into the motorcycle store so that nobody steals them. And he says, okay. Crazy. And so he stands guard for these random dudes that are actually like drug lords so that they don't get their helicopters stolen.
What in the world is going on?
So they go in to the motorcycle factory and they end up buying 250,000 units, 250,000 motorcycles. And in the US, they were retailing for thousands and thousands of dollars. The same exact brand, the same exact make, the same exact everything. They were retailing for thousands of dollars. In Russia, this factory was selling it for $200 a pop. They ended up selling majority. They got another like massive cargo airplane, okay? Flew that shit from Moscow with all of the motorcycles to Miami, ended up selling majority of these units of motorcycles to the cartels in Colombia. And they made a profit about over $3 million just from this one trip to the motorcycle factory. That doesn't
make sense, babe.
Yeah.
The number doesn't add up.
What do you mean?
How much did they buy?
$250,000.
Not 250,000.
No, 250,000 units.
And each is worth thousands of dollars?
Yeah, something like that. But I think they gave them a discount. So you'll see that they give like lots of discounts. I think they spent a lot of money on it. But it's weird. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know how much they make per deal, but I know for this one, they made over $3 million. I don't know like how much they were sold for, but that was just the pocket for how much, what's his name? Juan and Tarzan got from the deal. So they took home $3 million collectively together.
Back then?
Yeah. After like all the expenses, after chartering that airplane to do all of that. So they made $3 million back then. So that's a lot of money. And so with this extra money, Tarzan decides he's going to open up a second place. He's got this strip club called Porky's. It's doing really hot. Why don't we open up a restaurant called, and I'm going to say this and my fiance are going to giggle because I feel like our Russian friend says this. I don't even know what it means. Babushka.
Babushka.
What does that even mean? I feel like I hear that so much from them.
I thought it was a dish. Babushka.
The dessert? Is that babushka?
I don't know. It's a cuisine.
He opens up a restaurant called Babushka. And of course, this is a notorious gangster that's opening up this restaurant. So it's serving Russian food. I mean, lots of people are just spilling into this restaurant. And he decides to take on a restaurant partner by the name of Gregory Grisha Royce. Now, we're just going to call him Grisha. That's what people called him. That was his nickname. Tarzan and Grisha. They're running this operation together. Now, Grisha has an intense history. Grisha is not loved by the US government. He's definitely more hated than maybe Tarzan and the likes. Grisha, the DEA can confirm that he has at least killed one person with his bare hands. It's not even just he's killed one person by shooting them, it was a drive-by or anything like that. That seems a little bit more plausible, but like the DEA can confirm that he has killed someone with his bare hands. He's a nasty dude. You don't want to fuck with this dude, is what they're saying. He is scary.
What do you mean kill people with bare hands? Like choking someone?
Yeah, like he's that scary. Like he's not just a criminal. Like he's a hardened criminal. He's not the one that'll be like, hey, my little minions, go do this. Hey, someone just shoot him in the back, you know? I mean, he will just get so angry and rageful. And he was friends of Tarzan's parents. So they go way back. Like he was a childhood friend. They knew each other. They're both Ukrainian. And Grisha has always had anger issues. His first arrest happened when the police was like, listen, I don't know what you're doing, but I don't like it. You're getting arrested. And he got so pissed off that he got caught in a crime that as the police officer is trying to put him into his patrol car, Grisha bites the police officer's nose and a part of it fell off. Like he bit it off. Like he Mike Tyson'd that shit. That seems politically incorrect, but he bit off part of his nose.
What?
The police officer. World? Yeah. And so then from then on in the Russian mafias, he got the nickname of Cannibal because he was just biting off police officers' body parts because he was pissed off. Like, I think that's so crazy. You get arrested and you got caught doing something illegal. You get arrested and you're like, no, how dare you? Like, let me bite off your nose. Yeah, very strange. And he particularly took a liking to heroin. So he was a massive heroin trafficker. He was moving heroin internationally, and that was just kind of his forte, made a ton of money from it. And finally, he gets caught in Bulgaria. I've never been to Bulgaria. I hear it's beautiful, but I also hear the prisons in Bulgaria be real crazy. And so he gets arrested in Bulgaria. He's in this Bulgarian prison, and he has no teeth. Now, the reason he has no teeth is because when the police arrested him in Bulgaria, they knocked out all of his teeth. They kicked him. They threw him on the ground and they knocked out all of his teeth.
Is it because they don't want their nose get bitten off?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I think probably less of the nose getting bitten off, because I'm sure there's a much more civil way of making sure your nose stays on your face. But I think it was more of like a, hey, you fucked with a cop, we're gonna fuck with you type of shit. Or also just for shits and giggles. I'm really not sure. And I'm not laughing because it's funny.
So he's toothless?
Yeah, so he became toothless.
Oh.
I don't feel sympathy for him. He was just not a good person. So he's sitting in this prison in Bulgaria, and the DEA decide, you know what? In order to play with the nasty people, maybe we need a nasty person on our team. So the DEA of the United States sends an agent to Bulgaria. Oh, yeah. And by the way, the DEA, they specialize in like drugs, right? So they send an agent to Bulgaria. They meet him in the prison. They meet Grisha. And he says, listen, what will it take for you guys, for you, Grisha, to work with us, to go undercover with some Russian mafias? I mean, you're going to be stepping on a lot of people's toes. You're going to have, after all of this ends, you're going to have the Russian mafia out for you. You're going to have the cartels out for you. Like, you're going to be really stepping on a lot of powerful people's toes. What will it take for you to work on our side and to give us intel and to snoop around and to sneak around and be our little spy? And he said, honestly, I would do anything to get out of this prison. Get me the fuck out of Bulgaria.
Damn. And so this is just like a movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so they said, all right, let's get on that Delta flight. I'm just kidding. I don't know if it was Delta. But the DEA agent and Grisha end up leaving Bulgaria and going into the United States, into Miami. So Grisha, like I said, was already friends with Tarzan. So Tarzan had no idea all of this happened in Bulgaria. He knew about the first arrest where he was nicknamed Cannibal, but he really didn't know that he got stopped in Bulgaria and it became this whole big ordeal, right? And so Tarzan sees Grisha and he's like, where have you been? What the fuck? I missed you. Where are your teeth? et cetera, et cetera. And Grisha's like, long story. I don't want to talk about it. Anyways, you got any work for me? Like, I'd love to do some shit. I'm excited. I'm ready to just hustle my way through these drugs again. Woohoo. And so Tarzan's like, yeah, yeah, sounds good. So right now I have this restaurant open called Babushka. Now here's the problem. I mean, it's always packed, you know. There's so many people in and out of Babushka. We get all of these Russian mafias. You know how they like to tip, you know. They spend so much money. They drink so much. They tip so much. It's amazing. But I love my festivities. And so he was spending a lot of money just having, like, entertainers, like belly dancers, come into Babushka every 2 seconds and just really splurging to keep these mafia men entertained and happy. And so he was actually becoming indebted because of Babushka. And so he tells Grisha all of these things. And he's like, okay, well, how about this, Tarzan? I'll give you $70,000 to help with your debt. Now, this is crazy because that was U.S. money. The DEA gave Grisha $70,000 to give to Tarzan to earn his trust even more. And so he said, with this, you're going to make me partner of Babushka. We're going to run this shit together. You and me, Grisha and Tarzan, Grisha, the DEA secret spy agent, and they start running Babushka together. And Tarzan had no fucking idea that he was working with the DEA.
So this tough ass man became the biggest spy?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And so he's the co-owner of the restaurant, and every day he'd be like, oh my God, my friends from Russia are here. And he would say, let's take a picture for the wall. Do you see that wall? This restaurant wall full of all of these pictures of these random Russians. And when I say random, I mean mobsters and mafia gang leaders. Anyways, let's take a picture to put on that wall. But Grisha always saved another copy of that picture to give to the DEA. And he would say, oh, this guy right here, this guy does this. This guy does weapons trading. This guy, you know, specializes in nuclear weapons, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so the DEA is like, give us more. And so finally, he's like, okay, well, Tarzan's out of town and I'm running this restaurant right now at midnight. You guys are going to come unclothed, not unclothed, but not in uniforms. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. That's a totally different part of the story. I'm just kidding. No. Wrong story. He says, you guys are going to come not in your uniforms. Don't be fucking wearing those navy ass jackets that say DEA on them, you stupidos. You're going to come in regular people clothes, and you guys can wiretap all of the tables. Okay. Do it very quietly. And so they're like, fuck yeah. So they go in, they wiretap all of the booths. And this reveals yet another slamming connection. I mean, the DEA is just getting slapped in the face left and right with how deep and how dangerous and how scary this entire thing is getting, right? So they start learning through these wiretaps that Tarzan and Juan have a really good friend. A friend that is much more powerful than Tarzan or Juan. To put it clearly, Tarzan and Juan are kind of like the bitch boys, right? They're kind of like, I mean, they're really scary. Don't get me wrong. But in the eyes of Pablo Escobar, they're like the bitch boys, you know? They're the messenger. They're the brokers. They're the car salesmen. You know, they make money. They make millions of dollars, but they're car salesmen. They're not the CEOs. They're not the one moving all of these products and all of these plans and masterminding shit. I mean, they're essentially car salesmen, but not their friend. Their friend by the name of Tony Yelster. Sorry. Everybody already knows him. He was a fugitive at the time that they found out that they were all connected. So he was already running away from the U.S. because he was selling tons of cocaine in the U.S. in Key West, Florida. He is an international smuggler. He is the one that has direct connection with Pablo Escobar. He is the one that works with directly Pablo Escobar. And his job is interesting because he's actually not part of the Cali cartel. He's more of like a hired consultant for cartels. So these cartels, these big dudes like Pablo Escobar will hire these consultants once in a while to be like, hey, listen, I need to move 10 tons of cocaine into this country. How do I do it? And he was internationally connected. So he had connections in virtually every single country that were major ports for drug trafficking. So he was the dude that you would call. He's like a travel agent. And so he was a major, major, major player. And he was just a weird fugitive. The U.S. said he has been in and out of the U.S., in and out of Switzerland, in and out of Europe, the South America. He has 41 different passports. That's what they know, that he has over 41 different valid passports. I mean, he has 41 different identities. By the time that they find out an identity, he's already like four people later. So this dude, I mean, at one point he was a Cuban Secret Service pilot. Like, he just was a lot. Like, he had lived a 41 just full life. And he was primarily a consultant for drugs and weapons trafficking. So you want to smuggle some drugs into a country? Tony's the one to call. You want to smuggle weapons into a country? Tony is the one to call. His nickname was Brain, because he was always the brains of the operation.
Yeah.
And he said it all started, right? So Tony, his entire life started when he immigrates from Cuba to Key West, Florida. And he said when he landed in Key West, Florida, he just knew that he was going to be a big balashakala. Like, he was like, fuck, this is paradise. This shit looks banging. There's sun, there's waves, and there's bitches everywhere. Like, those are what he said, not me. And he's like, I want to own this place. Like, not a piece of this place. I don't want to own a house on this place. That's so average, right? I want to own Key West. Like, I want to fucking dominate areas. And so within his first year of immigrating, he made his first $1 million. By selling cocaine. So it's not as admirable as it sounded. So his life motto is, listen, I want to drive a Ferrari, not a Chevrolet. Those are his words. Those are his two car models. That's what he lives by. He loves it. And so in 1990, he goes on the run for dealing tons of cocaine, identity theft. I mean, the list goes on. Illegal weapons trafficking, cocaine dealing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he just proceeds to taunt the police. Like, he would go to a different country and send the Miami police or the Key West police postcards signed by Tony saying, I'm sipping a pina colada on this shore. Where are y'all? I haven't seen you guys in a while. And he would send that shit and he would taunt the police. I mean, he was crazy.
These people are so savage.
I know. It's so weird because a lot of the times we talk about some of the darkest criminals, but they always get caught in a way. Well, a lot of them get caught in a way that seems relatively stupid. Yeah. Right? But then these people, I'm like, God damn, what the fork? I mean, these people and the Unabomber, I mean, his brother gave him in. If it wasn't for his brother, I highly doubt he would have been caught so soon. I mean, it still took like a decade or something so long, right? But no, he was just taunting them. And he was close to Juan. Why? Because like I said he wants a Ferrari, not a Chevrolet. And what does Juan sell? He sells Ferraris.
Not a Chevrolet.
And so he was really close friends with Juan and they started working together. So Juan's conduit to the cartels was almost always Tony. So unless they came and found Juan and it was like an individual cartel person that was like, I just want a fucking boat because I want a boat. But if the cartel itself was buying a fleet of boats, they always came in through Tony. They trusted Tony with the money, so they would give the money to Tony. The sale would be done. Tony would then pay Juan and Tony would take a cut, right? So yeah. It almost always happened like that. And a lot of these things were used to smuggle tons of drugs. I mean, they were selling these massive cigarette boats, you know, like the cool ones that you see on James Bond. They look like cigarette packs. Like it doesn't even look safe. They're like floating on top of water almost, right? Mm-hmm. And they would makeshift these engines in there. They would put in these powerful engines so that you could go really fast and you could evade a lot of other boat vehicles that might want to stop you. So they were selling cars to cartels. Then they were selling motorcycles. And then it went up to boats because the cartels were like, wait a second, we can just pack shit into boats and then bring them into the ports of Miami. So let's just get some boats. And then it got intense because the cartels started thinking, what can we do that's better than boats? That's much harder to catch and we can move way more product. And so Tony was like, well, I know exactly what you can do. And he's talking to these cartel people and he goes, you just need a Kamov helicopter. And they said, what's a Kamov helicopter? And Tony says, well, it has two rotors, okay? And it's really known for its big carry load. So you get this hook at the bottom of that helicopter and you can essentially hook it to a shipping container and it can carry 11,000 pounds. That's about 5,000 kilos of cocaine on a hook.
That's weird. No, you're dangling a box of cocaine.
Yeah, but they were like, we want to do that. I mean, I don't know where the cartel's dangling this shit. I mean, I haven't seen it personally over my house or anything like that, but they were like, we want to dangle cocaine. Let's do it. And okay. So they were like, how can you get it? And they said, well, in the U.S. right now, for a Kamov helicopter, it cost about $10 million.
One helicopter.
Holy and shit. So these cartel people were like, listen, we're billionaires, but like, we don't want to spend $10 million on a fucking helicopter, especially with the risk of like all of these things. Like, it's just not going to be worth it. It's not like we're just cruising on a helicopter for fun and we're billionaires. Like, we're doing it for work. And so they're like, I don't like this. And so then Tony was like, okay, let me try something else. So he goes knocking on Juan and Tarzan's door and he's like, listen, do y'all want to try to go to Moscow and see if you guys can get your hands on some Kamov helicopters? And they're like, fuck yeah, last time we went to Moscow, it went so amazing. Let's fucking go to Moscow. So Juan and Tarzan, they fly all the way back to Moscow and they start searching for these Kamov helicopters. And they found them and they were to secure one for $650,000. The same one that's being sold in the U.S. for $10 million. They were about to make a lot of money, okay? That's just all I have to say. They were about fucking crazy money until some shit goes down. Okay, so they get these helicopters. They got all these spare parts for the helicopters and they're like, throw in some motorcycles since we're here, right? And they charter a military aircraft.
In Russia?
In Russia.
For what?
To bring the helicopters back to Colombia.
Okay.
Now, this military aircraft is known to just be like a massive cargo ship. Like, that's what it's known for, right? It's not really known for like military weapons or anything like that, or being like stealthy in the sky. It was just known that it has such a big carry load, right? And so they're like, okay, we're gonna charter this military aircraft. And just to show you guys how cheap things were in Russia at the time and how much money they were making, in order to charter that in a place like the US, which you probably couldn't in the first place, I mean, unless you had really good reason, but if you wanted to, it would cost about $1 million a trip. Okay. In Russia, it was about $200,000. So they were like, fuck yeah, take that out of our cut. Like, let's put it in. And so they chartered this massive military aircraft. They loaded up with multiple birds, as they call it. Those are helicopters. So they put the helicopters in there. They put the spare parts. They got some motorcycles. They were like, let's fill up the space anyway. So they put some motorcycles in there. And then Juan is like, okay, this is what we're going to do, Tarzan. I'm going to go to Colombia first. And I'm going to wait with the Cali cartel. And we're going to wait for the shipment. You are going to make sure this lands where we need it to. So you are going to be on this military aircraft with the pilots, and you're gonna make sure this fucking aircraft gets to Colombia. And yeah. So they're like, okay, no big deal. They fist bump. Juan goes to Colombia. Tarzan's waiting for this one to take off, right?
Yeah.
And as they're on the tarmac, snow is falling, it's blizzarding. Uh-huh. And these jeeps roll up, just a fucking fleet of jeeps. And they start pulling out machine guns. They don't fire, but they pull out machine guns.
Holy
they draw
shit.
Their guns. All of them are like packed head to toe with masks. This was not the police. This was not the military. It was the Russian mafia.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. The way that Tarzan describes them is very comical. He says he calls them big neck dudes. So they've got these thick ass necks, he said, with some gold ass chains on them. Like, these were big dudes is what he's trying to say. Like, they're massive. And they've got machine guns, like automatic weapons. It's not like, it's not cutesy play anymore. And so he's like, what the fuck? And they're like, do you think that you can leave without paying us for these helicopters? They really don't care that these helicopters got sold, but they're like, this is my territory. So anything that comes in, anything that goes out, goes through us.
So the time has changed, huh?
Yeah.
Since then, their first time here.
Yeah. And so they're like, you have to pay us a commission to get uh-huh. permission to leave with these helicopters.
Yeah.
And Tarzan's like, these aren't even your fucking helicopters. What the fuck, right? And they're like, we don't care. So we want payment. And he goes, okay, well, I don't really have any money, but how about I give you cocaine? And he wasn't saying that in like a, let me just give you a line in the bathroom, Kelly. Like, it wasn't one of those like LA party vibes. It was like he was talking massive what? Kilos of cocaine, like not just like here's a little for you, you know, it was massive amounts of cocaine he was saying. And the problem is he doesn't have any cocaine. He really also doesn't have much access to that much cocaine that would be worthwhile for this Russian gangster. So he's like, fuck, what do I do? He's just making shit up because he doesn't want to die. I mean, imagine you're just in like a fleet of jeeps just rolled up, and instead of Visco girls, it's the Russian mafia. I mean, I'd be scared. I mean, even if it was a fleet of jeeps of Visco girls, I'd be scared. I don't know which one's scarier, honestly. I'm kidding. And so he's just scared. He's just bullshitting. You know, he's like, I'll get you cocaine. I'll get you so much cocaine. You will be bathing in cocaine. And they're like, yeah, you're fucking lying. And he's like, hey, you ever heard about Pablo? They're like, what? He's like, you know, Pablo Escobar? And they're like, shut up. You don't know Pablo Escobar. He's like, I fucking know Pablo Escobar. How do you think I got these choppers? You think I just like buy this shit for fun in Russia? No, I'm doing this for Pablo Escobar. And so they're like, then we want to talk to him. Now, I know what you're thinking, and this is exactly what I thought. Oh, well, I mean, it seems relatively easy. Tony Yester is friends with Pablo Escobar. They'll just get Pablo on the phone and Pablo will just explain it away. And then I realized that these are cartel people and Pablo would rather kill these people than have to like do some bitch work for them. So that's not going to happen. They're not going to let Pablo know that they've faced an obstacle in Russia, even if these helicopters were for Pablo Escobar. So Tarzan calls Juan and says, listen, Pablo. And Juan's like, the fuck? He's in Colombia. And he's like, fuck, fuck, fuck. And he goes, listen, Pablo, we need to talk. If you don't get on a flight to Russia right now to talk to these people and tell them that I'm working for Pablo Escobar and Pablo's going to do something great for them, I'm a dead man. You hear me? I'm a fucking dead man. And so Juan's like scratching his head in Colombia. And he's like, so the choppers aren't coming? And he's like, no, you better fucking come to Russia. And so Juan hops up in a plane and flies to Russia.
Just like that.
Yeah. And here's the crazy thing. Tony Yester, this is how smart the brain is. he was in a resort in the Swiss Alps of Switzerland, because he knew already that with choppers like that, I mean, if you are talking about expensive, crazy, heavy load carrying helicopters like that, yeah, the KGB and the CIA, everyone would be stalking out those helicopters.
So why is he throwing them out there?
Because the job needs to get done, but he doesn't need to get in trouble for it, is his theory.
Really?
He's the brains. So he was in Switzerland. No one could get in contact with him. So, you know, Juan and Tarzan are like, what the fuck do we do? So Juan shows up pretending to be Pablo Escobar. Yeah. I saw both of their pictures. They do kind of look alike, but almost in like a not really way. You know, like kind of, but not really.
But do they even know what Pablo looks like?
Barely. Like they kind of have an idea of what he looks like, but it's not like, you know, exactly, crystal clear, right? So he pretends to be Pablo Escobar and he goes into a boardroom. A boardroom. Tarzan's crying in a corner.
Crying?
Yeah. Tarzan's like, Pablo! And hugs him. And he's like very shaky and nervous and looking around. And he's not that big strip club owner in Miami that he is now. I mean, he's scared out of his wits. And these Russians, they're like, hey, listen, Pablo, sorry to bother you. Please sit down. So they're in this boardroom with all of these fucking Russian mafia leaders. And it's Juan pretending to be the Pablo Escobar. I mean, all of them are armed with machine guns. Like, this could go very, very bad. And so the Russians sit him down and they say, listen, we didn't really kidnap your helicopter. We just want to make sure that we can have a friendship. You know, we just felt like if we kept the helicopters for a little bit, then we could maybe, you know, come to a friendship, an agreement. We want to be your representation in Russia. We want to be your distributors in Russia. We want you to send lots and lots of cocaine to us and we will distribute them throughout Russia. And so fake Pablo Escobar goes, well, how much are you talking? Like, how much can you guys move? And I mean, that's a drug term. I didn't really know that. I'm like, move.
Make money move.
Yeah, so they're moving these drugs. So how much can you move? How much can you sell, essentially, is what he's asking this fake Pablo, right? And the Russians look around and they look at each other and they go, 50 kilos.
How much is that?
It's about $1,000 a kilo.
50 kilo?
So it'd be like $50,000. Exactly. That's exactly what fake Pablo says. He looks around and he starts laughing. And he says, don't fucking tell me that you brought my ass out of Colombia to Russia to talk to me about 50 kilos of cocaine. And he said, this is a joke. Tell me you're joking. If you're not joking, it's going to be bad. And so this is fake Pablo, by the way. Like, this would be a cool conversation if it was real Pablo.
But he's like role playing really.
Yeah.
Deep.
Like, what would Pablo say? He wouldn't say, yeah, sounds good, right? So he's like, the fuck? 50 kilos? It takes me and my men the same time to pack 50 kilos as 50,000 kilos, you bitch. Yeah, he was doing the most. And Tarzan's in the corner like,
you're doing the most.
I'm sorry. And then Tarzan's in the corner like, are we pushing it a little too much? Like, I don't know. And so he's like, how about this? You get me a fucking warehouse. We're going to bring in at least 30,000 kilos. And we're going to start from there. You pay as you need. Maybe we'll get other distributors. Maybe we won't. And the Russians look around and they're like, that's a really good idea. And they go, shit, you got a deal. And they start shaking hands and they go, okay, let's party like the Russians do. They get drunk. They fucking take pictures. The Russian mafia is like, hey, Pablo Escobar's here. I'm so sorry.
Okay, basically, the fake Pablo sold himself.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. They believed it. Yeah. They became friends.
Yeah.
The rest is history.
The rest is history.
They got the chopper too?
Yeah. So they're like, oh, all right, God. Well, you guys go back to Colombia. We'll be waiting on your word to send us these kilos of cocaine. Woo! Partnership. I can't believe I met Pablo Escobar. And they let them leave to Colombia. And they will never see an ounce of Pablo's cocaine.
Wow.
From at least Juan and Tarzan, at least. And so now this big-ass military aircraft lands in Cali, Colombia. And these choppers roll out. And the coolest thing about this cargo aircraft, I don't know if it's like this with a lot of cargo aircrafts, but the cargo door is like the nose of the plane comes up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It opens up.
Yeah, it looked freaking crazy. I mean, I can imagine that's the talk of Colombia. They said every single person in Colombia, government officials, children in schools, everyone was talking about it, about the cartels getting helicopters. I know it's like we're laughing, but it's like really sad and not funny. But like just the fact that like the way that they explain things is just so weird,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh my and God. So it lands in Colombia. These helicopters get out. And let me tell you, I mean, this was big. The Cali cartel, this was big. They said, I can't believe you little fuckers were able to pull this shit off. That you guys were able to bring Russian helicopters to Colombia. At a great price, too. Like, who the fuck? Yeah. And so suddenly, I mean, Juan and Tarzan's life is just going, it's on the up. Like, they were getting more inquiries from different cartels. You know, they were like, can you get us at least like one boat, two boats, three boats? I mean, they were just making so much money. They were well known, which they thought was great because they could get tons of bitches. They were considered untouchable because, I mean, I don't know about you, but if I ever heard someone was affiliated with any sort of cartel, I would not try to fuck with that person. I would not try to be like, let me just go like see what happens if I punch them in the face. That's not what's happening, right? So they were considered untouchable. But that also means that they were getting a lot more attention from people who didn't give a fuck about things like that, such as the DEA, the FBI. All of these government agencies, the U.S. ones, they were like, we don't think so. You're not that cool to us. We don't really give a fuck. And it was just getting worse because Tarzan was definitely that dude that could not keep it in his pants. I mean, you're supposed to keep it on the DL, right? Which is odd because I heard the Gambino crime family in New York, the ones that he kind of learned most of his roots from, they really were the opposite of this. They weren't flexors. They weren't as big of flexors as you would assume some families with that much money would have, right? But he didn't really pick that up, I guess, because he had limos picking up his daughter from elementary school. And he was just a strip club owner. So it just didn't make sense. I mean, the IRS should be knocking on his door like yesterday. Like, none of this is making sense. And so the DEA is like, we need to amp things up. They're doing some crazy shit. We thought it was Ferraris for the cartels. We thought it was boats for the cartels. Now we're talking Kamov helicopters from Moscow, Russia. We need to do something and we need to do it quick, right? Yeah. Some shit's going to go down. So they get a guy by the name of Alex Yasevich. Now, Alex Yasevich is of Russian and Ukrainian descent. He grew up in Brighton Beach, which is the same area that Tarzan and Grisha grew up in the U.S.
Okay.
And he was living in Washington, D.C., and he was a DEA special agent. So he grew up in the same place. He knew all of them, but he just went in the opposite path. So he's working for the government, and he specialized in undercover work in Washington, D.C. So they said, bring in Alex Yasevich. We're going to take him to fucking Miami, and he's going to go undercover. So they get Grisha in, who, by the way, is the dude that like wiretapped for the DEA. Remember the one with no teeth?
Yes.
Yeah. So they meet each other and they're like, oh, I remember you from Brighton Beach. And the FBI is like, well, yeah, well, you guys are going to work together. Okay. And so they're like, okay, sounds good. And so Grisha goes to Tarzan and is like, I want you to meet our friend from Brighton. Do you remember him? Right. We were so close back in the day. Remember? And he brings in Alex Yasevich.
Yeah.
And Tarzan's like, I think I remember you. Yeah, I think I remember you. Oh, shit. Like, how you been? And for Tarzan, he goes by this saying that a brother of my brother is family. So either he really did remember him or didn't remember him and was just trying to be polite. Because Grisha introduced him, it was a no-brainer for him.
Yeah, yeah.
They were going to be friends. And so Alex starts working at that restaurant too, Babushka, and he's hanging out with them. And he's not necessarily working there. He's just doing a lot of connecting there, right?
Uh-huh.
And so they're like, okay, well, what do you do? And Alex was always like, you know, I'll tell you when I'm ready. Yeah. Now, finally, they decide to tell him, and it's a complete lie. But Alex Yasevich, the undercover, says, I specialize in heroin and weapons dealing. So I like to traffic weapons and heroin into the U.S., but I want to get on that cocaine money. That's why I came to Florida, because I want cocaine money. You know what I mean? And so then he's like, oh, shit. Well, I mean, I know people who know people who know cocaine really well. Like, I know Juan, who knows Tony, and Tony knows Pablo, and I think Pablo knows cocaine. And so he's like, I could probably hook you up, right? and we could make so much money. And so they're like, okay, sounds good. Let's talk more later. So they're on and off meeting. And then finally, things come to a very awkward pivot at Miami Fontainebleau Hotel. Very famous hotel in Miami. Right. So they decide to meet at the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami, and the FBI, the DIA, they had decided to wiretap this room with a camera.
Okay.
Now this camera was disguised as a radio, but there was a camera inside of it, okay? And so the hotel room, they both walk in. Alex Yasovich, the fake heroin dealer that works for the DEA, he's undercover, and Tarzan. And Tarzan is trying to sit at the chair that's facing away from the camera.
Yeah.
And so you see Alex being like, hey, you should sit at this chair.
Wait, so are they trying to catch Tarzan right now?
Yeah.
Okay, just him, no other big fish.
Yeah, so they're hoping, because he seems like the most loosey-goosey, that he will rat everyone out, you know?
Okay.
And so he's like, no, you should sit over there. And so Tarzan's like, okay, you're fucking weird, right? And so he sits over there, and they're talking, and then this was all caught on camera.
Uh-huh.
Tarzan looks straight into the camera that's disguised as a radio, and he says, that's a fucking camera. And Alex Yasovich, and by the way, remember how I said Tarzan sits with his ankle on his knee, his legs crossed, with a gun right at his ankle?
Yeah.
So very easy to just fucking pop out, goodbye, Alex Yasovich.
Yeah.
So he looks at it and he goes, no, that's a fucking camera. And Alex is like, what do you mean? Why would there be a fucking camera? Like, I come to this hotel all the time. It's always there. There's no fucking camera. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, no, it's a fucking camera. You want to know how I know it's a camera? Uh-huh. Because I used to do some spying shit. And there's a spy store in Miami. A spy store, guys. A spy store in Miami. And I saw that exact camera model. It's a fucking camera. And so Alex Yasovich is like, it's not a camera, dude. It's not a camera. Fine, you think it's a fucking camera? Why don't you walk over there and pull apart this camera?
Uh-huh.
And then Tarzan looks at it. You can see him contemplating it, and he goes, eh, maybe it just looks like that. Anyways, and he just didn't check the camera.
Oh, my God.
But everyone was fucking shitting themselves, including, I mean, obviously, Alex Yasovich. But everyone that was watching it, everyone, you know, it just was, it could have been so bad.
What were they doing in there?
They were talking about the next big deal. And that's what Alex found out. Was the submarine deal. He tells Alex Yasovich, he says, we're trying to fucking buy a submarine. You'll never believe it. And he's like, what? A submarine? And he's like, yeah. So I know this guy named Tony, okay? Tony's like the brain. He's the conduit. He knows the Cali cartel. They're going to give him money. They're going to give him millions and millions of dollars, probably close to $40 million to buy a submarine. Now, me, Tarzan, and Juan, we know Moscow, Russia. We know these people. So we're going to fucking go in there, and we're going to buy a military-grade submarine from the Russians because they're corrupt, and they'll sell it to us for about $35 million. And here's the crazy thing. Why do they need a submarine? Why does the cartel need a submarine? I mean, is it just like a fascination? Is it, you know, boys and their toys, that type of thing? No, because a submarine goes underwater, can be undetected if you're really good with it, and you can fill it with 40 tons of cocaine. 40 tons. That's about $40 million of cocaine sitting in a sub going anywhere in the fucking world. It was going to be one of the biggest reserves of cocaine just in that submarine. If they filled it with 40 tons, that's the biggest backup reserve of cocaine in the world. That's what they're going to do.
That's so fucking insane.
Yeah.
And
so
out of this world.
Out of this world. But it happened. And then it happened again in 2000. We're going to get into it. And
they
so,
did it?
Well, you'll see. So they said, you know, it's going to cost about maybe $40 million. They're going to fill it with 40 tons. That means within one trip of delivering cocaine to wherever they wanted to get it to, they've already paid for the fucking submarine. I mean, the cartel's crazy. And yeah, I mean, it was just insane. So he finds out all of this and he's scared. I mean, everyone's scared. The U.S. was kind of quaking, but they were also hoping. I mean, it's so crazy that there's no way it's going to happen. Nobody just sells submarines. It's not something that's on the free market. Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? But would it happen? So Tony meets with the cartels. They say, you know, you get it, we'll get you the money. No big deal. We make billions of dollars. We'll fucking give you the cash. It makes sense. It's an investment in our future. We can do it. And so Tony's like, okay, Juan, Tarzan, it's your time to shine. Go to fucking Russia and find us a military grade submarine. So Tarzan has friends in Russia. He calls one of them up, right? And he says, listen, I know it's a crazy question, okay? But I have a friend who's asking me if I can get them a Russian submarine. And he goes, a Russian submarine? And he goes, I know, but they're trying to pay like millions, 40 million. And he goes, 40 million, Russian submarine. Okay. Yeah, let me call you back. And he calls him back the next day and he says, does your friend want one with missiles or without missiles? Like, it was that, like, that fucking easy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this definitely happened mainly because of all of the political turmoil in Russia at the time. Like, there was no leader. It just was full of corruption. I mean, you could kind of say that now, but there's a very strong leader that would make sure that there's nothing happening like this, probably. But I mean, back then, there was none of that. There was no leader. There was no... It was just corrupted, right?
Yeah.
And so they go all the way to Russia. And who do they meet with? Do they meet with some street dealer? Do they meet with some submarine manufacturer? No, they meet with high-ranking military officials from Russia. Tony Juan and Tarzan. All of them got stars everywhere. Each star was like a good honorable deed that they did. They were just fucking filled with stars. Tony said it was like looking into the night sky. Like, all of them were high-ranking officials. And so they're like, okay, well, we're going to make this deal happen, right? And they're talking. And then finally, the military officials from Russia who are trying to sell this military submarine illegally was like, let's go to the sauna. So Tarzan's like, great, sounds good. So they go to the sauna. All these Russians get naked, butt naked, go into the sauna. Tony, who's Cuban, is like, I'm not fucking going into the sauna. Like, I'm not getting naked. That's nasty, right? Uh-huh. And then Tarzan is naked, right? And he's like, if you don't go into the sauna, the deal's off. And he's like, what? And he's like, that's how Russians do it. We need to see you naked first. he's like, what do you mean? I've never fucking done, I've done deals before. Nobody has to see me naked. And he goes, no, it's a Russian thing. You see the other person butt naked and that's how you know you can trust them. And he's like, no, I don't want to do it. And he's like, fucking think about it, because we're about to lose the deal because of your stupid ass, because you can't get naked. And so he's outside, right? And then finally, he decides to be like, fuck it. Okay, it's millions of dollars. He takes off all of his clothes. He goes into the naked sauna with all of these naked military officials from Russia. And then the conversation that he's hearing is fucking nuts.
Uh-huh.
They're offering to sell them nuclear weapons. And they want to know if the Cali cartel is interested in purchasing nuclear weapons. And Tony's like, what the fuck? No, like, guys, we just want a submarine. Like, we don't need missiles. Like, we don't really need any of that. Like, that's too much. I don't think they want that. And this was the first time he was like, I'm going to get fucking executed for this. Like, he was like, this is bad. This is so bad.
Tony, the
brain? Yeah, he was like, this is bad.
He was scared.
Yeah, he was scared, right? Now, to mind you, submarines. Let me give you some background on submarines, because... I mean, it sounds comical. $35 million, submarines, right? There's only 38 countries in this entire world that own submarines. And most of them are diesel-based submarines. And this is important because the ones that they were trying to sell in Russia were diesel-based. And diesel means that they have a loud engine noise. So if you are a country with lots of tech and lots of, you know, defense things, you know, like if you're the US, then you've probably got all of these little detectors in the sea and the ocean that can detect loud noises. They detect frequencies. I mean, even without that, I'm sure they'd see a sub coming from super far away, right?
Yeah.
But diesels are really, really loud. Now, nuclear-powered submarines are relative just silent. Like, you can go dark. You can practically disappear underwater. No other country can detect your nuclear-powered submarine. And there's only five countries who own nuclear-powered submarines. The United States, China, the United Kingdom, France, and Russia. And it takes about $3.5 billion to build a nuclear-powered submarine. $3.5 billion. Yeah. Yeah, so that's why most countries do not own a $3.5 billion submarine.
Oh my God. That is stupid money.
Yeah, that's stupid money. And the Russians were trying to sell them a diesel-powered submarine for $35 million. And any country that does have submarines, the submarine base are some of the most heavily guarded assets. They are some of the most heavily guarded bases that even if you're part of the Navy, unless you are of a certain league, you cannot even go look at a submarine. You just can't.
Really?
Yeah, it's that intense.
Huh, I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't either. I thought submarines were like super cute. I thought I could go on a field trip to see one. I thought it'd be like, elementary class, would you like to go see a submarine? I thought it'd be that easy, but apparently not. Huh. Yeah, so weird. Because
they got that little reflective glasses. You just stick out yes. on top and you just see what's above the water.
Yeah. I mean, are you sure there's like non-military grade submarines maybe that are super cutesy? I don't fucking know. But these are like military grades that we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And so the Russians decide to take them to the secret Navy base to see the submarine.
Wow.
Now, here is the pickle that they're in. They see it. Uh-huh. They see the submarine. It's beautiful. It's amazing. They want to buy it.
Uh-huh.
But the Cali cartel said, how do we know? You better send some pictures with proof so that we know that there even is a fucking submarine. I mean, we know that none of you guys are dumb enough to run away with our money, but we just want proof that the Russians aren't trying to play us. So you have to take pictures of this fucking submarine in Russia. Yeah. And so they're all standing there and Tony's like, fuck, we gotta get a picture. What do we do? What do we do? Like, the Russians are gonna fucking kill us if they see us trying to sneaky take a picture of this fucking submarine, right?
Yeah.
And so Tony's like, listen, Tarzan. You're going to get some pictures of that submarine. I don't care if you die. You're going to get pictures of that submarine. And so Tarzan's like, what do you mean? They're going to kill us.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't care. So Tarzan goes up to the captain.
Yeah.
And he goes, so I have a really dumb question. And the captain goes, okay. And he says, can I take a picture of the submarine? And the captain says, yeah, you're right. That is a really dumb question. It's a military base. No, you cannot take a picture of the submarine. And so Tarzan goes, okay, well, I'm going to think about it.
You gotta ask, right?
Yeah, you gotta ask. And so then he knew that these captains were making about $20 a month.
Oh.
And so he looks to that captain and he says, how about I give you $200? Now, again, this was not back in the day where $200 was like $20 million. Like, $200 was probably like, I don't know, $300, $400 today's time, right? And yeah. He's like, what if I give you $200? And the captain looks at him. Uh-huh. He takes the money. Uh-huh. And they have a photo shoot with the submarine. They have photos of Tarzan with the submarine. They have photos of Tarzan with the captain with the submarine. They have photos of just the captain with the submarine. They have photos of Tony with the submarine. Tony, Tarzan, captain with the submarine. And I mean, it was a fucking, you would think it's an engagement shoot. Like this, they had so many fucking photos in this secret military, secret Russian military base with the submarine that they're about to buy. And who are these people? Are they part of the Russian military? Are they part of another country's government that were invited? No, these are drug dealers.
The irony in this story is unreal.
And so then they go back home. Tony goes to Colombia to talk to the Cali cartels and he's like, fucking look at these pictures, dudes. I fucking saw this submarine. This is not some shit that I got off the internet. This is my picture. I saw it. And Tarzan goes back home and he does the same thing, but not with the cartel, but with all of his friends. He's like, guys, I went and saw a military submarine from Russia. And he would just lay these pictures around his desk. And guess who had access to that desk? Fucking Alex from the DEA. Alex Yasevich. Sorry, I just really like saying his last name. It's so fun. So Alex Yasevich, he sees this. He helps himself to it and he brings a copy. And the DEA, the Operation Odessa, they freak the fuck out. And they immediately call the Department of Defense. They call the U.S. Navy. Uh-huh. And they call NATO. Let me give you the direct, because I'm going to fuck it up. I just know that they're really scary. Like, I would never fuck with the NATO. It's like a NATO. Bunch of countries. What countries are here? Huh. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization is an alliance between 30 North American and European countries. That's really scary. I'd be scared. And so they call the Department of Defense, the U.S. Navy, and fucking NATO. And NATO was able to confirm that that is actually a real Russian submarine base and not just like some random Russian dude who built a submarine. Like, this is the real deal. This is the real shit. Now, the NATO had their own concerns. They're thinking that this is not okay because, yes, it is diesel, but every diesel submarine has the option to go electric. Like, if you get some fucking mechanics and some engineers and you have the money, you can make that shit. You can convert a diesel into an electric submarine, which then you could go dark underwater. No one will sense you coming.
Okay.
And that's a huge danger. And so they're like, this is some shit. Like, we got to do something about it. Like, we cannot let this sale go down. Like, I don't even care. We're going to put so much money into this. We're going to funnel this to make sure these dudes do not get the submarine. Now, Alex, at the same time, goes back to Tarzan and he gives him a phone. It's an international phone. He says, this is a clone phone. I got it for you. It's a present. Now, Tarzan did not know that it was being wiretapped by the DEA. They set up an entire fortress just to listen to the conversations Tarzan was having. They had, Russian translators who were there every day.
Uh-huh.
And it was used to be, you know, talking internationally. They had hoped that he would call Tony from it, and they wanted to find Tony because he is the brains of it. He's an American fugitive. Well, yeah. He's a Cuban, you know, citizen, but in America, he's a fugitive. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to find him. And so they're wiretapping. They have all these Russian translators. Tarzan's constantly using that phone, which then now the DEA and this task force is learning so much information about the submarine deal. And everyone starts to kind of feel like some shit's going down, like someone knows about this, right?
Who, Tarzan and them?
Yeah, they all kind of have like this uncomfortable inkling. Mm-hmm. And even the Russians are getting a little bit stressed out. Like the Russian military are like, okay, well, suddenly we want to know what you guys are going to do with the submarine. Like, you need to tell us honestly, what are you going to do with the submarine? Which is crazy because, you would think that they have no morals, but now they do. And so
I thought they knew what the fuck they're doing.
No.
Oh, they just want to make a sale.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're like, just tell us. Like, we just want to know who the owner is going to be. And they're like, well, no, it's not going to be for like missiles or anything like that. We're not going to start a war. It's just going to be for drugs, right? And yeah. They're like, but who? But who's going to own it? And so there's just lots of tension going on, right? Tony is like in Switzerland, just like flying around like all these like Swiss Alps resorts, making these phone calls. Tarzan and Juan are like, we need to get this deal done. We need to get this deal done. And then Tarzan and Juan decide to have this brilliant idea. And they call Tony, and they say, listen, I don't know if this deal's going to get done. The Russians are getting angsty. We think the DEA is on to us, you know?
Uh-huh.
We saw some people that saw the FBI lurking around a couple places. You know, shit's going down, dude. How about this? You get the money from the Colombians, and we'll all take it. We'll split it. Everyone gets like $10 million each, and we'll just make a run for it. We'll run from the cartel. We'll run from the FBI. We'll fucking ditch everything, and we will go on the run. Okay. We will live like millionaires somewhere else. And Tony's like, do you know who you're talking about? These people, they make $7 billion a year just from US, this cartel.
You're dealing
with people who have eyes, who have money, and their entire business is based off of the fact that nobody can cross them. So if you fuck them up, them killing you is not even showing the world that they're strong. It's showing the world that their business is normal. Like, that's the only way they can maintain a business like this. You are literally putting their business in jeopardy if you get away with crossing them. Do you know who the fuck these people are? And Tony's like, here's the thing. You've never met Pablo Escobar, okay, Juan? Okay, Tarzan? Let me tell you. If you guys were to ever meet him, you better bring a box of toilet paper because you'll be shitting yourself the entire time. And so he's like, okay, but like, you don't think we could just like fucking go to, I don't know, like Switzerland too, and like just hang out there with like $10 million? I'm sure we can hide if we have that much money. And he's like, you're fucking stupid, right? And so Tony's like, whatever, I'm gonna get this deal done. So Tony goes to the cartels and he's like, listen, we need $10 million to show the Russians we got the money. That's gonna put them at ease. They're gonna stop fucking asking us questions. The minute that their eyes get put on that paper, that $10 million, they're gonna be done. They're not gonna ask us shit. We're gonna get this deal done. That sub is yours, right? Uh-huh. And so they're like, okay, we're gonna send $10 million to France. Here's the pickup location. You pick $10 million in cash up from France, take it to Russia, do the drop. And so Tony says, sounds good. So he fucking flies to France. But he already had a different plan. Tony had a plan that was very similar to Tarzan and Juan's.
Oh my God.
So Tony gets the $10 million from France and he dips. He does not head to Russia, but he heads straight to Amsterdam where he has a close friend. He breaks into his friend's house. And he sits there and he had put the $10 million of cash into his garage. And the friend gets home from work and he says, when's the last time you've been on a trip? And the friend's like, what are you doing here, Tony? I don't know. Years I've been working. And he's like, here's $10,000. Take your girlfriend to Spain for 2 weeks. Don't come back. And he's like, $10,000 to Spain? What's going on? And he goes, don't tell anybody that you've seen me. Don't tell anybody why you're in Spain. Don't tell anybody anything. And if everything goes well and you don't fuck up, there's going to be another $10,000 waiting for you when you get home. And he said, fuck yeah. And he just packed his bags, never asked another word, did not know that there was $10 million in his garage. And he just dipped. Uh-huh. And so he spent the next 2 weeks organizing plans, getting his shit together. The one thing that he says is so troublesome, his poor life, is that $10 million is a lot of paper. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of paper. And so he was organizing on how to deposit them into different accounts and et cetera, et cetera. He never reveals to anybody how he did it.
Did it what?
Did the storage of that $10 million.
He got away?
But he got away, yeah.
So who told the story?
He was interviewed in Africa in a secret location by a documentary. He is still an international fugitive, and the cartels are after him, and he was on a private jet being interviewed.
Oh my God, this is so insane.
And they asked him straight up, they said, hey, so in the cartel line of power, where were you, you know?
Yeah.
And he looked at them and he said, geez, why are you guys so fucking curious? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it, okay? He's like so weird. Like he's so nice one minute and then he's like snaps at you the next minute. Yeah, so he never tells anyone what he does with that $10 million.
That's so fucking epic.
Yeah, we just know that he's using it right now. We don't know if it was deposited into like international overseas accounts or if he had a plan for it or if he has like $1 million in cash that he takes with him everywhere. I really don't know.
Probably, right? Bitcoin.
Oh my God. And so Juan gets a call in Miami and he doesn't really know what's going on. He just knows like the walls are closing in and he's just frantic. But it's not like him and Tony are lovers. It's not like they talk every 2 seconds, right? And so he has no idea until he gets a call from the cartels, from the Cali cartels, yeah. Some of the members. And they say, hey, what are you doing? Are you in Miami? And he goes, yeah, I'm in Miami. Like, what's going on? And he's like, no, nothing. We're just going to be in Miami for the next couple days. So let's hang out. And so he's like, yeah, come by, you know, come through. And so they come and they spend the entire day fucking partying and getting drunk and eating. And they're just having a blast. And then the next morning they say, where the fuck is Tony? And he was like,
they waited a day.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And he was like, what? And he's like, Tony ran away with our money and we just want to say we want to know where are his wife and kids. We heard they live in Miami.
Oh, wow.
And so Juan hops up in his white Rolls Royce and he drives them to where Tony's wife and kids live. It was in a nice condo and they wrote down the number. They wrote down the address and they said, okay, well, we can go to lunch now. And they tell Juan at lunch, you better tell Tony to talk to us, you know? Talk some sense into your friend because he's got a hit out on him by one of the most powerful cartels in the world. Like, your friend Tony's not going to do well. You better tell him.
And I thought Tony works for the other dudes.
What
do you mean? The brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, anyways.
What do you mean works for the
other? I thought Tony was closer with the cartel than with Juan.
Yeah, but I mean, he crossed the cartels, so they're thinking maybe, you know. Okay. And then Tarzan starts getting nervous. He hears about all of this and he's like, fuck, I feel like they're going to arrest me. I don't know. Something just feels weird. And so he puts his daughter into his car and he's driving her to kindergarten. Beautiful day. And then suddenly there's a bunch of cop cars behind him that are driving slow. So he drives slow. He drives the speed limit. And then they pull him over anyway. And he gets really mad about it. He's just like the cannibal. He's like, am I arrested? And they're like, no. And then he's like, then I don't want to come with you. Yeah. Like, but you need to come with us. And he goes, no, I don't want to. And he goes, no, you have to. And he goes, why do I have to if I'm not arrested?
Yeah.
And it's just like this very intense conversation. And they're like, are you seriously arguing about this? Like, do you not know what you're being investigated for? Like, are you really trying to have an argument about if you're arrested or not? Like, fucking get in the car. And so he gets somewhat arrested. Like, he's not arrested, but he is arrested, right?
Yeah.
And they bring him in and these DEA agents are fucking questioning the shit out of him. And he's like, I don't know why I'm being arrested. I did nothing. I didn't do anything. Now, Juan at the same time was in Moscow. He was securing a $45 million helicopter deal for the cartels. And so he's casually walking around in Moscow and he notes that his lawyer was Jewish, right? He had brought his attorney with him and his attorney's Jewish. And mm-hmm. he wanted to go see all of these synagogues in St. Petersburg. So he's like, oh, fuck, I gotta go see all this shit, right? And then he gets a call from Tarzan's brother and he's like, hey, what's popping, right? And he's like, what do you mean what's popping? Where are you? And he's like, I'm in Moscow. Mm-hmm. And he's like, there's literally a manhunt out for you. Like, I don't know. I'm reading the papers. My brother just got arrested. My brother Tarzan just got arrested. They're looking for you. Something about a submarine. Were you guys doing something about a submarine? It's all over the fucking news, dude. What are you doing? And so he's like, oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. So now you have Juan, who's going to end up turning himself in. You've got Tarzan in jail. You've got Tony on the run from government agencies and cartels with $10 million. And so they're in jail and they just, both of them don't talk until 18 months later. Tarzan decides, I can't fucking do it anymore. Jail is not the place for me. 18 months was more than enough. And he finally agrees to cooperate and testify against Juan.
Uh-oh.
So Tarzan testifies. Juan gets convicted of conspiracy to traffic cocaine, and he gets a 40-year sentence. But immediately as his sentence comes out, Tarzan goes, I fucking lied.
What do you mean?
To the judge. He's like, I fucking lied. I was coerced. I didn't want to talk. I recant my entire testimony. And because his testimony was technically the only evidence that they had to overturn Juan's conviction.
Why did he do that?
To get Juan out of jail. It was like just a risk that he took. So.
But why did he do? Oh, so Juan's free?
So Tarzan signed a deal that said, you can't arrest me. He ended up getting deported to Israel. So they said, either you're going to get deported or you're just going to stay in jail, right? And he says, okay, then don't arrest me for, like, you don't charge me of any of these crimes that you think I did. Just deport me to Israel. And if you sign that and say that you're going to just do that, I will talk and I will tell you about Juan.
Yeah.
And so they signed the paper. So Tarzan cannot get charged for this crime now.
Yeah.
And so he testifies against Juan. And the judge, this is the only evidence that Juan is involved, right?
Yeah.
Concrete evidence. And so then the judge sentences him to a 40-year sentence. But then Tarzan goes, I fucking lied.
Uh-huh.
And legally, if that's the only evidence, then technically the conviction has to be overturned.
Yeah.
It doesn't hold water.
So what happened to Juan?
So Juan gets released and he's living in Miami.
And what about
Tarzan? And Tarzan's living in Israel. He's been deported, but he's just hanging out in Israel now.
You can do that. This sounds way too stupid.
Yeah, I think it had to do with the fact that most of the times with things like this, there's a lot of other evidences. There's like either small evidence, DNA evidence, ABCDE evidence, you know.
So they got played by these two people.
Yeah. Whether it happened the way that they thought it was going to happen or if it just fucking happened because it seems like they do have just random flashes of luck.
Okay,
I have no idea. Right. It just was very, very strange.
okay.
So Tarzan has now moved to Moscow. And he is still doing business with Juan. They won't release what type of business they're doing, but they're still very close friends. Juan is still in Miami. He was recently arrested again, though, for drug and weapon charges. But, I mean, it doesn't seem like that one's going to be a long sentence or anything like that. And so he's still working with Tarzan. Tony is an international fugitive. He is hiding from the government. Now, is he still hiding from the cartels? Well, he was interviewed, and he says... Well, if you guys don't know, Pablo Escobar has passed.
Yeah.
And he says, all my enemies are dead and I'm really fucking happy. And I will see them in hell when I arrive. So he's just running from government agencies, it seems. He ended up in 2000 organizing another submarine delivery. I was going to say sub delivery, but it sounds like he's delivering for Postmates. a submarine delivery. And he ended up getting... most of the parts of a Russian submarine to Colombia, but the mountains of Colombia were raided because someone tipped them off. And so all of these agents found these cartels like assembling a Russian submarine. So he was able to get it there. I don't know if he was paid for it. He didn't release, but I feel like he was because it was up to the cartel to reassemble it. You know, he just had to deliver all the pieces and the product. So who knows? He might be sitting on 35 mil now.
What the fuck is going on with this?
And so Tarzan says, listen, Miami is the most beautiful place. He wants to die there one day, but he's been deported and pretty much blacklisted from immigration. And he just has one question. Tarzan, strip club owner, dildo car runner, just all of these things. He just said, why is someone called a special agent versus a regular agent? Why is one more special than the other? Is it because they're fucking good looking? He just wants to know.
Are you serious?
That's it. That's his last question. just why is there a regular FBI agent and then a special agent? What the fuck is the difference? He said, it's just one good looking. Are you so special? I'm special. Do I call myself Special Tarzan?
Are they comical?
They're so comical. Yeah.
Wow.
That is one of the craziest crime stories. I mean, strip club owner, dildo submarines. I mean, what's popping, really? Also, it's very scary. I think the scary thing that I will take from this is that nothing is not for sale, apparently. Everything's for sale. Everything's for sale. And I did not understand the sheer depth and power of cartels. I mean, I knew a lot, but I did not know this much. Mm. Like that they were just like Russian submarine, $35 million. Here it is.
Yeah.
And how much money they make, and how I think the cartels control over like 90% of the cocaine distribution in the world.
Well,
but then I'm like, who's the other 10%? Yeah.
What?
Yeah, who's the other 10%? We want to know. No, just kidding. We don't want to know. That's something I would rather not know.
Wow. Unreal.
I mean, let me know what you guys think of this case. I know it's so unlike the other crimes that we did. It's just a weird crime. I have no words. I hope you guys enjoyed today's video or podcast, and I will see you guys next Wednesday, where I will penetrate your submarine ear holes with my kilos of... Okay, I gotta go. Bye.
Bye.